Somebody asked some information. I do have a card that has a website on it. There's a lot of teachings on the website, and it's connected to a YouTube channel that has more teaching, more videos, some from this center, all categorized by topic. So if that's helpful for you, feel free, and there'll be more information forthcoming about the pilgrimage in 2020 if you're interested in that. Some people have asked me about that, so feel free like that. So to energize ourselves after our lunches when everybody's kind of, okay, is we're going to also do some Tara praises one round, again, to help remove obstacles for Kadampa Center to host Light of the Path Retreat in 2020 with Lama Zopa Rinpoche. It's a very special retreat, and this is one of the part of the advice Rinpoche had given the center. So because we have a number of people in here, why not just do it, right? And it's a nice way to also re-motivate like that. And we are on page 199 in the Gold Prayer Book. And sorry, 191, sorry. 191. Do you know how many people are you going to count the people that are here? So if you don't really want to recite, that's fine. You could put your hand up so we won't count you, but otherwise we'll count and try to add up some of the numbers. So Donna, thank you for reminding me. So again, perfect opportunity to remind yourself, if you'd like to just close your eyes for a moment and reflect, checking on your motivation. Just noting how it went at lunch. And maybe I've come back into the room and completely forgot that idea of benefiting all living beings. And the best way to do that is to become a Buddha. So if you'd like, feel free to reestablish that motivation. And also calling on Tara, and you have a lot of images of Tara in the room, and asking her to clear obstacles, not just from the retreat happening, but from all the different aspects of our life, to clear any obstacles of whatever we need. And we'll read on page 91, first asking her to come here, paying homage to her, and then we'll recite a praise for each of the 21 Taras. From your sublime abode at the Potala, O Tara born from the green letter Tam, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara, you who rescue all who are destitute. To you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. Om, I prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator. Homage, Tara, swift, heroic, eyes like lightning, instantaneous, sprung from opening stamens of Lord of Three Worlds, Tearbone Lotus. Homage, ye whose face combines 100 autumn moons at fullest, blazing with light rays resplendent as a thousand star collection. Homage, golden blue one lotus, waterborne and hand adorned, giving effort, calm austerities, patience, meditation, her sphere. Tathagata's actions triumph without limp, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection. Homage to Tare, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all beings. Chakra Agni Brahma Marud, honored by the host of spirits, corpse raisers, Gandharvas, Yakshas, homage with her trade and pay sounds, destroying foes' magic diagrams. Blazing in a raging fire blaze, homage to Ray, very dreadful, destroyer of Mara's champion, she with frowning lotus visage, her of all enemies, homage at the heart, her fingers, adorn her with three jewel mudra, excited, all directions wheels adorn, homage, she so joyous, radiant, crown emitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutar, subjugating Maras Devas, homage she able to summon, all earth guardians assemble, shaking, frowning with her hong sign, saving from every misfortune. With crescent moon, all ornaments most shining, Amitabha in her hair, sending out much light eternal, homage she midwreath ablaze, aeon ending fire abiding. Joy surrounds you, troops of enemies destroying, homage she who strikes the ground with her palm and with her foot beats it. With the letter Hong, the seven levels she does conquer, homage happy, virtuous, peaceful, she whose field is peace, nirvana. Om and Soha, destroyer of the great Eve, homage she with joy surrounded, tearing foes' bodies asunder. Hong and knowledge mantra, arrangement of the ten letters, homage to Ray with seed letter, of the shape of syllable Hong, by foot stamping shakes the three worlds, May Ramanda, Yar, and Bindya. The hair marked moon of Deva lake form, with twice spoken Tara and Pei, totally dispelling poison. She whom gods and their kings and the Kinaras do honor, armored in all joyful splendor, she dispels bad dreams and conflicts. She used two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with twice Hara and Tutar. She dispels severe contagion, homage full of liberating, power by the sight of three nature, destroys hosts of spirits, yakshas, raise corpses supreme to Ray. These praises with the root mantras and prostrations thus are 21. Turn to the next page, the mantra at the bottom. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Thank you very much. Everyone's all woken up now, right? You know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is very skillful, obviously. He's amazing in everything he does. But sometimes when you're in Dharamsala at the teachings, and sometimes there's tents up partially. Now they have very nice tents. The first times when I went early, the early years, there wasn't much. And it was always raining. And anyway, now there's... So in the afternoon, there's a lunch break, and everybody comes back, and a lot of people fall asleep. And a lot of people fall asleep anyway with His Holiness because I think sometimes the energy is so strong that it just, we're not pure enough to hear it. You know, we just go right to sleep. His Holiness, you know, is so amazing. So he must have been looking out and seeing a lot of people kind of, you know, and there's lots of people, thousands of people. And then he all of a sudden says, you know, the way his voice is in the middle of the teaching, he goes, "Oh, there's a monkey." You know, you could see on one of the tents, the monkey running across the tent. And then there's some spaces in the tents in between. And then he said, "Oh, be careful. He doesn't urinate on you." Like, the monkey's in the, and suddenly everybody was wide awake. You know, it's so skillful. I thought so, you know, so amazing. Got our attention. That's it. Okay. Seven verses. Okay. And again, with the eight verses, just concluding a bit of that, we kind of get teachings on them a bit. It's quite popular for Lojong, and then you read them and you're like, okay, yeah, you know, determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit. You know, but it's like, bring it into your life and make it real. If you work on one a day, and some people put them on the refrigerator, put it on some kind of, you know, they don't take up much space. So you at least get that imprint every time you go to the refrigerator, which is common for people. It's in the middle of their houses often. They're in the kitchen, you're, Okay, and then you see determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings, more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold the most dear at all times. And you start reflecting from things you hear in teachings, things you've read like that about, well, better than a wish-granting jewel. Wish-granting jewel sounds great. And cherishing these beings because they're the ones that get me enlightened. This is how I get enlightened. That I'm dependent on all these living beings to get enlightened. And so just each thing, kind of bringing it into your life, how you'd practice working with, you know, vigilant the moment a delusion appears. And they leave imprints because we have other imprints. We have many other imprints that aren't that healthy for us, right, that we're used to. So, okay. The seven points of mind training from Geshe Chikawa go under headings of the preliminaries, the main practice, transforming adversity into the path, applying the practice through your whole life, the measure of mind training, like how's it going, the commitments of mind training, and then the precepts of mind training. So they just divide them into those categories. And this commentary, and so let's just look. We're going to go through these because these are super practical. And this is another thing you can play with and put on your refrigerator. And it's easy to take one a day. It's easy to take one a day. I forget, I think there's 52 of them. And there's different translations. So I've got different notes of different commentaries that I wanted to read. Okay, so let's look at these. First, train in the preliminaries. If you have the sheet that says the 7 points of mind training, this is what we're looking at right now. Excuse me. Train in the preliminaries. We have standard preliminaries in Tibetan Buddhism. Some of you are aware, and they're practices that function to clear away negative mind states and to enhance our positive qualities, as well as conditions we need to succeed in the Dharma, on the Dharma path, basically. And these are standard for some Lam Rim texts as well. And this is one, this is the beginning of the Lam Rim. This is one of the preliminaries. So I'm not talking about actually necessarily preliminary practices, like counting 100,000 refuge mantras or doing 100,000 prostrations, but they're all really subsumed and connected to that. First preliminary, maintain an awareness of the preciousness of human life. This was the morning. Did anybody do this morning lying in bed?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was it for you?
It gave me a focus, you know, what I'm trying to do with my life, why I'm practicing.
To appreciate first year, yeah. Yeah. Different than every other day or not?
I've been doing that for a long time.
Okay, great. Great. Who else? Did you try? You tried as well, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you do every day normally? Or was it new? Somewhat new for you?
No, most of the days.
Most of the days you do?
I yeah, in the morning.
Helpful?
Yes.
Helpful? Other people's experience? This was the first minute or two of my good circumstances this morning, and my good qualities was like your second minute. Waking up. Because we were saying, what do you wake up with? Now, some of you forgot, right? Totally forgot to do. So leave yourself a note, some little thing. And if you want, let's say you set an alarm on your phone, and then it wakes you up, and then you look at the alarm. Have the alarm say, like, precious life, or, you know, something that's going to get you to be like, oh, yeah. We have to leave reminders in the beginning. You have to try and leave reminders if you forget. If you're here with a partner, you can remind each other. Like that. Any other experiences? This first appreciation, it's so basic. So basic. So you have to see if it rights your mind a bit, if it rebalances the mind in a better way, as opposed to waking up with my coffee, my shower, my list, my this, my... I know people that wake up with a groan. So they have the lists that have now are leaden on them. And then the next moment, the body... And they're kind of like, oh... Like, they don't want to get out of bed because, so why not? You have a great life. I know we have problems, but we really have to keep reminding ourselves about all these things we take for granted. So the first preliminary, maintain an awareness. If you can, let's appreciate. How many times you go to a restaurant and you complain about something in the restaurant? Do you ever do that? The bread is this. You never do it. Okay, good for you. Right. But you don't want them to spit in your food? My niece is a server. I never thought about people doing that. She said they do it. If you're rude to your server, like people, they can sabotage your food and you don't know it.
I didn't do that.
Right? But you go, there you go. You go to a restaurant. This is common with people. I see this. You go to a restaurant and then like, no, we don't really want to sit at that table. We want to sit at that table. Uh-huh. I don't want to sit in that chair. I want to sit in that chair. I want to look out, you know, it's okay. First you get that. Now you sit down. And then it's like, this isn't the way it was last time. I don't like, this is cold. This is like, like, what are we? It's incredible. And I was just thinking, anyway, every time I go over to, you know, Nepal, poor country, but I was up in the mountains for 3 months this time. Well, not totally 3 months, but a couple of months. And I've been up there a lot of times before. And, anytime you're in, I think, a country like that, you interacting with the local people, it's harder and harder for me to take my life for granted of what, you know, because there's certain people there, the poor people. Just think about your life when you have no choice. No choices. So you have to work 7 days a week because you're poor. And that's all you know, because that's what poor people in your area, that's what they do. They grovel for some kind of horrible job where you're working all day. It could be 12-hour days, you know, working at a lodge, carrying hot things of water, and you're this, and you've got all these spoiled Westerners that come with money to do a holiday, and we have to wait on them. And I'm never going to have, and once in a while somebody might give me, like they might like me, and they give me their ski poles when they leave, or a t-shirt. It's like when you see this all the time, it's so humbling for me. It's so humbling for me. So that's a great preliminary, is to have, maintain an awareness. I also had the good fortune, there's a nunnery below Laudo, like a half an hour walk down, and I've known them. I've been down there for years doing nungnes with them. And now the older generation of nuns that I first met, 1990, I think it was, they've all died except for two of them. They've all passed away. And now there's a new generation. There's like 30 and 40 year old nuns. And now there's a new crew who are like kids, you know, not even teenager that they're there. And there's about 30 nuns. So they built a grand new gompa, and we did two nungnes. So I went down to do two nungnes with them, these fasting retreat with the Buddha of Compassion with prostrations. So people, they have a big gompa now, so now you can make full-length prostrations. They used to have a little gompa, little meditation hall. The first time I would, excuse me, you would make a half prostration. This is how small it was. You would stand up and somebody would make a half prostration in your spot. Like you had to share. So now it's a grand gompa, beautiful. And they're very cool, these women. Some of the strongest women I've met. But the gompa is freezing cold because it's huge. It's cavernous now. The little one, you'd build up body heat from everybody. But it's got a high ceiling and it's basically, I brought my little, my clock that has a thermometer and it's 45 degrees in the gompa. You're not allowed to wear sleeves or hats or anything as monastics. They give you a big meditation cloak, very warm, under it. But when you get up to make prostrations, you're not taking the cloak with you. You can't. So I was standing up, and I was so cold, and I just thought, so now I have to reach my bare arm out onto the floor to make, you know, I was really like, you know, and they were kind of, but what happened is, in front of me, where I was seated, where they seated me, were five people. Two old nuns right in front of me. And then on this side was an old mother with her disabled son and another friend of hers who was old. Okay, so now the old mother and the disabled son, I met in 1990 at Nungnaes. I saw him when he was a baby, and now he's like, I don't know, 30, and she always brings him to the Nungnaes, and he kind of has some understanding. It's amazing the imprint, this guy. But he does the Nungnaes, and he's so disabled, but he gets down on the ground, kind of crawls down to make a prostration, a full-length prostration, and the two old women could hardly make prostrations, but they did as well as the two old nuns. Okay? This is my vantage point. So for me, how could I not make a prostration? There's nothing wrong with my body right now. So you see this and you go, because one day I won't be able to make a prostration. But that's not today. So how can I not do? So your precious life. So one main preliminary, train in that. Okay, here's number two. Be aware of death, death and impermanence. Well, that makes sense. Not in a morbid way, but it's not to paralyze you and make you afraid that you're going to die, but you are going to die one day. Why not allow it to motivate your practice? We don't have that much time. We need to get to it right now. Number three preliminary. Recall that whatever you do, virtuous or not, has a result. Karma. Reflect on karma. How is it helpful for mind training? This person just showed up and they're yelling at me now, or they're criticizing me, or they're telling me my job wasn't good. And I notice I'm getting pretty agitated right now, and I want to say something back to them. But, if I have a quick view of the eight verses, like, they're showing me my mind, they're showing me where I need to work. I'm not comfortable, but they could be, like, really a precious jewel helping me get enlightened and seeing where it works. And then with karma, I must have created the cause for this to be showing up right now. That's what Tibetan Buddhism would have you do, to train your mind. The cause must be in there if this negative thing is coming up. Whatever's coming up, it's a result of past activities of my body, speech, and mind. So some reflection on that can help us stay calm and open and spacious with the difficulty. The fourth preliminary, contemplate that as long as you're too focused on self-importance, too caught up in thinking about how you're good, how you're bad, how you're this, you'll suffer. Obsessing about getting what you want and avoiding what you don't want doesn't result in happiness. So all the self-cherishing, all the self-cherishing, and this is so much suffering. So it's a reflection on suffering, the basic nature of suffering as well. You want certain things, right? And you don't get them. You suffer. You don't want certain things, and they're right in front of your face. So instead of overly focusing on that, again, the manipulation of pain and pleasure, gain and loss, eight worldly dharmas, that's not going to bring happiness. So again, awareness of precious human rebirth, awareness of that situation's quickly changing and slipping away, death and impermanence, karma, suffering. So if you go through the Lam Rim, those technically are the preliminaries. That will take you through the motivations of people with the lesser capable beings and the medium capable beings, motivation of the Lam Rim, before we get to bodhicitta, the great vehicle. Let's look at the main practices. 7 points of mind training. Consider all things and events as dreamlike. Like seeing all dharmas, all things. Dharma can also be thing with a small d, as a dream. As a dream. Okay. Whatever you experience in your life, pain, pleasure, heat, cold, gain, loss, whatever it is, it's like something that happens in a dream. Although you might think they're solid, they're like passing memory. You can experience this open, unfixated quality in meditation. So we can certainly do that in meditation. All that arises in your mind, love, hate, desire, all the rest of different experiences, memories, it's not solid. It's not solid. Although the experience can be very vivid, it's just a product of your mind. It's just a product of your mind. Nothing solid is really happening out there. So, again, here comes your difficult person. Nothing really solid there. Karma's operating. That's probably why I'm seeing them as difficult. In a dream, sometimes it's extremely real what's going on for us, and you wake up and you go, huh, the murderer's gone. Or, you know, you're holding something really tightly in your hand. It's nothing there. When you're in meditation, those of you that want to develop a deeper meditation practice, some of you already have. Like that. So if you're really meditating sometimes on the nature of mind, it's you see that there isn't really any essence to your thoughts. You know, you've got one thought, here it comes, but now there's another thought and another. And if you trace where they come from, they're coming from a previous moment of your consciousness. Previous moment, but the essence, there's not really much essence there. Not much. So what happens is they take up space based on what we load onto the thought. This happens to us a lot. We get hooked, you know. So you're in, maybe it's just a Dharma center. Talk to people. Dharma centers aren't perfect. People think they should be. You know, you're Buddhist. You get angry? I'm like, we're human beings. So they think Dharma centers should be above it. Then they put monks and nuns on pedestals. The only place we can go is to fall off. Dharma centers. So many people, Dharma centers ask me, because I ran a couple centers, so sometimes they'll just say, can you sit in on this meeting or help us? I've got a question. And what happens is somebody comes and then there's, here's the story, right? And, you know, it's her. She's doing it. So a story starts. And a story simply starts because I didn't get my way. I had an idea how it should go. And then, you know, I asked a question and I'm somewhat involved. I show up and I volunteer and I'm, you know, like that. I'm happy to do that. I asked a question. I didn't like the answer I got, you know, like, and I've heard people say this to me, like they're being secret or they're something like this, you know, and then the story starts. And then every time you start seeing her or him, it's a problem. It becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So again, please analyze. I just made some light little thoughts. They're very, very heavy. And now I'm focused on them. They're taking up a lot of space in my mind because I've added weights to them. So they're in there. So you have to check your stories. So until you've had a direct perception of emptiness, I found this very liberating. Until you have a direct perception of emptiness, your story is always wrong. Always wrong. You have a valid perception. You certainly have a valid perception, okay, based on what is showing up, but to your limited mind. And haven't you heard about stories? You started a story going, and later you hear the truth, and it's completely different than your story. And you're like, whoa. Like that. So I think we have to consider the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind is that it's clear and knowing. Clear and knowing. Clarity and awareness is your mind. That's mind in Tibetan Buddhism. Is that how you experience your mind? Right? Anybody here experience their mind like that? Sometimes, once in a while. Yeah, once in a while you get a little. But is that the pervasive how I feel about my mind?
No.
A lot of people say, my mind is busy, it's cluttered. But no, the real nature, if you want to go back, is clarity and awareness. So what's all this other stuff coming through? It's simply the nature of the imperfect, limited mind. So we start to watch it, and then we start trying to change it. Let's look at the next one. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. This is again about the mind. Look at your mind at just simple awareness. Simple awareness. So sometimes I like to take people through meditation on the nature of the mind. We've done some of that in the past. For instance, the clarity of consciousness, and you are, maybe we should just do this right now. This is, I love doing these meditations. Just to see, some of you familiar with this have done the mind and its potential courses of discovering Buddhism, but some of you I know are newer. So it's really nice to spend a little time with the mind. Just find a comfortable position. And again, this meditation you can do for however long, however short you have. And after you find the comfortable position for the body, bring your awareness to your breath. So imagine you are lying on your back right now on a grassy hillside. It's very comfortable, and you're gazing up into the clear blue sky. You know, those perfectly clear days. And all there is this expanse of this luminous blue sky. And try as best as you can to merge yourself with that experience of the spacious luminosity of the sky that is like your mind. Sometimes a cloud comes into the sky. Floats through for a while. We know a cloud is not the sky, separate from that, but it has an ability to abide for a while in that space, changing, and eventually passing away, disappearing. Just like a thought, a light thought comes up in our mind. So if you're noticing any little thoughts and ideas that pass through, right now, can you just see it like a cloud in the sky? Just observe for a moment how it seems to take up space in the mind. It changes, it becomes another thought, another idea. And eventually let it go, returning your awareness to that experience of the clear blue sky, the spacious luminosity, merging yourself with that as much as possible. Occasionally, the sky is completely obscured by a bank of rain clouds. You know the sky is beyond, but you can't see it. Similar to when a big delusion arises in the mind, comes through, like anger, fear, grasping, anxiety, jealousy, pride, like that. Larger event of the delusion. The more you can remind yourself of the nature, the true nature of the mind, clarity and awareness, the more quickly the delusion can decrease. As another analogy or visualization, right now imagine you're seated looking out over a very clear mountain lake. You're sitting and gazing at this very clear mountain lake. Luminous, it is like the mind. And every once in a while, a bubble comes from the depths, comes up to the surface. And from that bubble on the surface of the lake, ripples go out. Similar to when a thought arises in the mind, the light little neutral thoughts create some small ripples in the mind. Heavier delusions create a very agitated experience of the mind. Imbalance. So gazing out over this clear mountain lake, keep the mind focused there, again, merging yourself with the clarity that is like your mind. And just notice when ideas and thoughts rise. What kind of ripples do they send out in your mind? How quickly before they settle back into the surface, like the bubble disappearing. And so now, whether you'd like to stay with the luminous, spacious sky, do you want to just focus there, or the clear mountain lake, just stay with one or the other. And as you're trying to stay focused on one of those images, while sometimes mental experience comes up, like a thought or an idea, see if you can go beneath the thought or idea that bubbles up, beneath that cloud that forms, touching the nature, the true nature of your mind, that space of awareness. what it is between the clouds, between the thoughts. So return yourself to lying on the grass on your back, looking up into the sky. And bring yourself back here to this space. When you're ready, please open your eyes. Is that helpful? It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do. Slowly you can do longer, can do more. So it's one of the general antidotes to countering delusion in your mind. Is when you can remind yourself, anger is not the nature of my mind. Desire is not the nature of my mind. Jealousy is not the nature of my mind. Or anxiety or depression or anything like that. It's simply coming through because there's a habit of that in my consciousness. I've had a moment of that previously in my mind that's a little bit more exercise. That's it. That's the only reason. And because of karma, again, first train in the preliminaries. So if I've got my basis, and the reason it starts off, just to go back for a moment, to precious human rebirth, you need to be mentally healthy to practice Dharma. You need to be mentally healthy to practice Dharma. Lama Yeshe used to say, Dharma centers are not mental health institutions. We get a lot of people that are mentally imbalanced at our centers. Why? Because we have a lot of compassion. We want to be open to anybody, especially the retreat centers. Oh my goodness. I have had hands full with many mentally ill people that come. And we try to have them come if we could support them in a certain capacity. But you have to be pretty balanced. So precious human rebirth is I'm okay. You know, I make mistakes, but basically I'm okay. And I feel healthy about myself. Okay, where a lot of people are crippled with low self-esteem, then you're trying to practice from there. But if you have that balance of, it's a fundamental thing first, is we're all doing pretty well. I know we have problems and fair enough, but basically it's okay. And then I'm going to sober myself a little bit to think about death and impermanence. But you have to get that first thing out of the gate is that you're operating from a fantastic opportunity. That. So the first antidote, general antidote with it is oh, the nature of my, you know, I'm having a, and we would say in Sanskrit, klesha. Klesha is delusion in Sanskrit, klesha. K-L-E-I-S-H-A, I think. So, you know, one time I was at Vajrapani and we had meetings every week. We had a community meeting so that the elders who built their first original cabins there, some of whom were still living there, wanted to kind of secure that the cabin would always be there. So they wanted to have some say, even though they weren't doing the day-to-day work anymore. And some of the people, the staff we had hired, found it kind of oppressive with them. And there would be different fights. And somebody, one of the founders, the elders, a good friend of mine, she stood up across this table and started yelling at me during one of the meetings, like really intense. And she wasn't like that normally. And I was like, whoa, what is happening? And she's a longtime practitioner. So all of a sudden, in the middle of this tirade, she catches herself. It was so brilliant. I loved her so much at that moment. You know, she catches herself and she's like, realizes she's completely out of control. And she looks at me and she says, I'm sorry, I'm having a klesha attack. Like she did, you know, delusions were just toppling her. But she caught it and she just owned it and we had a big laugh about it. And I said, I know you feel really strongly about this issue. Okay. Like I'm listening to you. But, you know, but the fact, so you have these klesha attacks. But that's not your mind. That's not the nature of your mind. It has an ability to come through the mind, and it seems like it's everything about you. But you can absolutely get rid of those delusions permanently from your mind. So I like to just go back and remind myself, you know, completely consumed with desire or grasping some moment, and this is not the nature of my mind. Okay. I'm feeling the discomfort of this huge delusion, or I'm completely aggravated at this guy right now, or I'm having an anxiety attack. It's not the nature of your mind. And if you have a friend, a Dharma buddy, you remind each other. You know, if they're going down the hill and suddenly you can sometimes catch it and you have permission with them to kind of, and you can say, hey, you know, remember the nature of your mind. Sometimes Dharma centers, people are like, I don't want to remember the nature of my mind right now. I just want to be angry at him. You know. So certainly humor is helpful, but it's a really helpful antidote. Nature of your mind, simply clarity, and it's aware of things. That's your mind. But if you don't sit enough with that so what happens is it's very hard to get to the spaces between the ideas and thoughts. You know, but beneath those clouds, there is a space of awareness there. So when you do longer retreats on the nature of mind, you can sometimes get a real sense. You start to hook into this, that there is a space of awareness there. That's your mind. I think that's kind of exciting as well. So again, in examine the nature of unborn awareness, you're going to look at your mind. You're just looking and seeing. Okay, this is not deep analysis at this point because it says examine. It's not deep analysis. You're looking and seeing if there's anything solid there to hold on to. Anything solid. Let's just take anger. Any of you get angry? Okay, anger. So when you're angry, it's anger. It's, you know, and there it is. It's all consuming here. You feel it in your body. When you're really angry, you feel it in your body. And I've seen people when they have a meltdown and they go ballistic and you see a vein comes out here, the face gets red. It's not attractive. If you're interested in being attractive, don't get angry. It's not attractive. But you see these people and sometimes I'm really like, you know, is this guy going to blow a vein or something? It looks really unhealthy. There are people I think that have had heart attacks in that space. Out of intense anger or something. Okay? So when you're in that thing, can you recall your last kind of angry something? Can you bring something up to mind? You have something in your mind a little bit? Okay. Does it seem pretty disruptive and pretty solid? It's kind of a thing there. You know, there's this thing that comes up in the mind. Is there anything really solid about it? Can you just have a look for a second? And I love that. Is there anything solid to hold on to? And you look at it and you go, well, It's made up of, Buddhism say it's made up of moments of consciousness. My mind, there's conscious moments of my mind, and right now they're in an angry space, so you go angry, angry, angry moment of mine, angry moment. But what is all that anyway? There's nothing really there. It feels solid. We make it very solidified. So that's really helpful in that sense, is there's, because look at it also, our mind, when you start looking, examining, as it says, our mind is constantly shifting and changing. Just look at that then. So let's say you are gripped in a thing. Maybe the last time you had intense, somebody was asking me today, how many of you have children? Yeah, number of people have children. This is our biggest attachment, right? This is probably what we're most attached to, is our kids. It's natural. It's very natural. It's very hard to have a relationship or have children and not be attached. Lama Yeshe used to say that as well. So if I notice this huge attachment, my kid tells me she just got a job across the country from me, or then you have, anybody have teenagers? Good luck to you. And teenagers, and then when they turn and something goes on and something goes wrong, and then suddenly I hate you, and there's a big fight, and there's, you know, whatever goes on, the mind's constantly changing. So not only their mind constantly changing, but if I get really upset, and this has happened, and somebody yells at you, and it's a terrible thing to be yelled at, you know, and you're really like, whoa, you know, and maybe you did mess up, and what is why they snapped at you, because you did mess something up, and you're like, yeah, and maybe you didn't mess up, but they still snapped at you, and now you're starting to fall into that bad reputation area, and then the mind starts ruminating about that, making a huge trench. When your mind ruminates unhealthily, right? It's a huge trench you're making. So it's much easier for me, as soon as some little trigger gets activated, I fall right into the trench. And I'm going to start obsessing about that again. Oh yeah, they all think I'm like that. That's all I am. I never do anything right. Really? So you really have to examine. And your mind's constantly changing. So maybe in the morning you woke up, and that's not where the mind was going at all. It wasn't in that anger thing. It wasn't in the grasping. So you know there's other aspects of the mind. So if I find the big delusions there, relax. Because in the next moment it's going to change. And every moment of mind is made up of a beginning, middle, and an end. You want to get more subtle, beginning, middle, and an end. And if you say, well, I think the reality of my anger or the reality of my fear was in the middle of the thought. Well, the middle has parts. The middle has a beginning, middle, and an end. So is it the middle of the middle? Even the middle of the middle has parts, a beginning, middle, and end. Beginning, middle, and end, beginning. You break everything down, everything can be further broken down, so you can't find anything there. Does it make sense? Are we communicating? Einstein knew this. He used to talk about as far as molecular physics. He kept saying, like, you can continue to break everything down until you're not going to find a fundamental, inherently existent building block, which is what the highest school, Prasangika Madhyamika, says in Tibetan Buddhism. You can't find that fundamental, essential building block that doesn't change, that's permanent, that inherently exists, that has intrinsic value. Like that. These are all synonyms for concrete existence. Unchanging, independent existence. Nothing has that. It doesn't mean that we don't practically exist on some level. We do. But not in this self-important way that we think we do, that doesn't have any causes or conditions, parts, like that. Okay. Next one. Let even the antidote be freed in its own place. This is also, don't hang on to anything. Don't hang on. It keeps coming back to this, the main practice. Let it go because there's no essence there. Don't hang on to anything, even the realization that there's nothing solid to hold on to. This is completely about opening and letting go. Can we bring our mind to this place? Again, mind training, you have to train. You don't go home after the class and go, I've got it. Maybe somebody does have it, but please be patient with yourself. It takes training. Many of you are trained in something. All your vocations you had to get trained in. Did you do it in 2 minutes or 2 hours? No, it was, I showed up again at the job, and then I showed up, and then finally, after some time, you have some proficiency. It's possible with the mind. This is the most important thing, is your mind. I'm not overinflating you, but I'm just saying the most important work you can do is on your mind. That's the thing that's going to go off to other lives. That continues on. Nothing else in your life will. Just the mind and its most subtle experience, with all the imprints that you're making in this life, with your body, speech, and mind, and all the ones that are already there from previous lives. So somehow we hear this again and again, but it's hard to really wake us up to get to work on it. Sometimes it's boring, it's tiring, it's laborious, and the rest of the world isn't always doing that. So the other things that are out there, the distractions, are more inviting. So this is how we become awakened warriors. You know, we have to wake up. It's time to wake up now. And I really don't, and the way Lama Zopa Rinpoche's teaching, and certain little rumors I hear about His Holiness's teachings and the state of the planet, we have to wake up. There really doesn't appear to be, I think there's an urgency right now. And I think if you really want it, meaning spiritual practice, if you really want to pursue something, you can make great strides, but the distractions are thicker and thicker and thicker now. And that's a sign of a degenerate time as well. So please try. But imagine this whole concept of every time I start tightening, it's about letting go, because there really isn't any essence there. You know, opening and letting go. Every time I, and it's adverse to the way our culture is usually moving. So we have to be very strong. So warriors are not that you go to war with others. I'm going to war with all the delusional notions I have that prevent me from getting to know my mind directly as well as the nature of reality. Because that's where happiness is. That's where your happiness is. Everybody wants to be happy. So, and then some, what's so interesting now with delusion and distraction is I've been to many retreats myself. And sometimes I'm leading a retreat, and sometimes I'm teaching, like today. And then we hear this stuff over and over, and then you're in there, and it makes so much sense, and you get all inspired, and you go, yeah. But then I'm home, and then the old patterns just come back. And I go, well, you know, tomorrow. We don't know if we have tomorrow. So whatever you can to be buddies to each other, to kind of remind you, maybe you get your friend to extend an extra half an hour to their practice because the two of you decide you're going to read this book together or you're going to try this meditation. You're going to work on your emptiness meditation. And you need a buddy. Get a buddy. And you can compare notes. Absolutely fine. And you can each of you research online what I like this meditation. Here's a guided meditation. I found this site. Like that. Make sense? Question? Yeah, it's almost like even like, so let's say you find you're very agitated suddenly, and then part of your mind, you know, kicks in and you go, you know, I know it really doesn't exist like that. And I'm, you know, and so then I get kind of even that idea about either the emptiness of it or it doesn't exist like that. There's no essence there. Even that, I don't have to overthink it. Even that I can let go and not get mired more into. And because sometimes it starts going into, oh, you see, I really did the practice. I'm really good now. I'm a really good Dharma practitioner. I'm experienced now, and I can control my mind. And that becomes another obstacle. So in some ways, we want to apply what you can and then let it go. Let go. Once you've countered, done some countering of the delusion, I don't need to overlabor that as well. I don't have to have any more stories about it as well. Yeah, very helpful. Mm-hmm. Next one, rest in the alaya, the essence. Alaya, the essence. Sometimes they'll talk about Alaya Vijnana, Alaya consciousness, storehouse consciousness with the other schools, Chittamatran schools and stuff. But Alaya is just this essence of there is a resting place, a starting place you can always return to. You can always bring your mind back home and rest right there, right now, in present, unbiased awareness. Okay. So basically, when you're comfortable doing meditations like we just did on the clarity of consciousness, you could call it the clarity, basically a meditation on your mind, on the real nature of mind. If you get a little bit familiar with that at times, okay? So it's always there. It's always there for you. Delusion comes up. It's always there. So, and some of you have consistent practices you're doing, a meditation practice. However long you do it a day. But somebody, I just did a consultation with a woman on Skype. She's in Massachusetts. And I needed to get her background. It was somebody new that I'd heard. So I needed to get some background. And she said, well, I do sit for a half an hour every day. Like she's got this going. But she says, I don't really do anything. I don't know what to do. But I sit and I just kind of watch my thoughts. Very, very powerful that she does it. Because she's got a habit. She's got a place. And what I noticed was when I started to meditate, I had moved to San Francisco. And I had this kind of high-pitched job. And sometimes it was dysfunctional, the office where I was working. And I had done a meditation course at Copan and then come back to the States. And I was able in my room to set up this little simple place to sit. It was nothing really, but I had a cushion and I would get so irritated at work and I would come home, you know, and I would, before I'd have dinner, before I'd kind of talk with my roommates and I'd just sit there to try to decompress from the day. Now, many of you do that. You come home from work and you have a little 20 minutes of just something else, right? Now, what some people do, I know some people aren't going to want to own up to this. Some people get home from work. And then there's this mudra that, you know, mudra, they talk about hand symbols that you do, that we'll do in different rituals. So do you know this hand mudra? There's that. There's another hand mudra. Do you know this one? So these might not be the healthiest mudras for you to engage in, but it's just habit. And people go, oh, I had such a hard day today. I don't want to think about anything. Okay. Now we do need breaks and things. But be careful because what you might be loading up if you watch Netflix or let's say you got, how many of you have cable TV? Do you have some kind of cable? Not so many anymore. So everybody's getting rid of cable. Why? Because you're paying for commercials, right? Load it up with commercials. Be skillful. If that's something that you watch, the commercials are deadly for you. Deadly space of mind. I used to watch the news with my dad in the evening, this evening news on something. It's kind of sad in our society that the pharmaceuticals are allowed to advertise because mostly now they're the only ones with money. They're the only ones advertising, right? But it's one commercial after another in my area. I don't know what it's like here. It's just one pharmaceutical after another when I would watch with him and it brainwashes you. So then and then you go to your doctor and you're like, I want that thing. I saw it on TV. I've heard people in my doctor's office when we're there with my dad, I heard people say it. I saw it on TV. Will that fix my heart? I need that, you know. So be very careful if you're surfing on the internet, what you're watching that goes in. Okay. So if you have, so I would come back and I would sit in this place because I didn't have TV then and I would sit in this little place and I would just let myself decompress. Like I would let all the thoughts go out. And it would be agitated thoughts about, oh, the art director and the other publisher and they were fighting today and that other woman, she's irritating and she, you know, and they're this. And I just kind of let it. So on some level, it's nice because eventually it would settle down. You know, I'd kind of, all that stuff would boop, boop, it would go. And then I'm home. And then I'd be in my little safe space again, where I got to look at my mind. So I got used to looking at my mind without even knowing how to meditate. I didn't know that much about meditation. But I would just empty my mind. And this woman, I just was talking to, I mentioned on Skype, she and I said, it's very powerful that you just at least are aware of your thoughts and what's going on. It's a great beginning place. So again, you always have the space to come home to, but the more you're familiar with it, you'll access it, you'll do it. So now I travel so much. I've been doing it for many years, and my practice has to get done every day. It's always with me. My home's always with me wherever I am. There's always this space that I come back to, and it can be very powerful for you, very nurturing, renewing. Please use that space. Everybody has it. It's not any mystical thing. You don't need massive training to just have a little calm, quiet place. And maybe if you live with other people, you can get them used to it. I've mentioned this before. Explain to them that this is important for you. If they're totally into something else, they're not into Buddhism, doesn't matter. They still have a good heart, doesn't matter. And you just say, you know, I'm kind of like in my meditation. I think I'm going to, if the doors close in the morning, like don't knock, I'm kind of, that's what I'm going to set that time aside for myself. You know, or you can just say, you come home from work and there's your partner. I think I'm going to just meditate for 20 minutes. And then I'll be out and I'll start dinner or I'll do whatever. You know, and they'll get used to it. The reason they'll like it and they'll try to protect it for you is they realize when you have the space, you're probably a little bit more even and balanced. When they butt into the space and they don't let you have the space, a little bit crankier. So then they're going to want you to go to your space sometimes. But I think I told the story in here of you, and sometimes they're afraid at first of all what you're doing. You're going to leave them behind. Okay? So you can reassure them, no, this just kind of makes me feel good. You know, I mentioned when I would fly back east from California to visit my parents. My mother was very skeptical about Buddhism, but she visited our centers and she met many lamas and went to teachings with the Dalai Lama and things. But she was always a little bit wary. And then I was first meditating and I would have my door shut, but my door to the room where I grew up, it never wasn't a normal door. It was just a folding door that you could just open. There weren't any locks. And so she would just open the door and not knock. That's just what she, you know, and she'd see my back. She'd see me in a certain position, but my back to the door. And she didn't know what I was doing, but she didn't like it. It was unknown to her. It wasn't, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. So she would interrupt and she'd say something to me. And then I would say, okay, I'll be down in a half an hour. But she didn't like it. She wanted me to be down now or she wanted, you know, but she'd kind of try to invade. So this went on and finally I said to her, you know, I need that time. It's important for me. For my life, my practice, I just explained to her nicely. And so I just appreciate if you can not just open the door or, you know, or if you see me like that, just shut the door and, you know. So I'm going to fast forward a couple of years. So she noticed that when I sit, probably better time with her, better experience with her. And a couple of years later, I'm visiting again. And my father, who's got a booming voice, and he's outside my door. And he says, okay, we're going to, you know, and he starts calling me. And I hear her outside the door. Shh, she's meditating. It's my mother protecting my space for me. How sweet, right? So get the people around you, if you live with other people, get them used to this is what you're doing and that it's natural, it's comfortable, it's no big deal, you know. You don't have to make it kind of like, I meditate, you don't, you know. No, you're just, this is what you're doing, you know. Couples are allowed to do different things and have different interests. It's healthy. Make sense? Yes.
If you would elaborate a little bit more on the term alaya, because it sounds like it's a permanent something or a place or whatever. And when I looked it up, I didn't get a clear sense of what it was.
I forget the literal meaning of it. I would say essence. Alaya Vijnana. Is like storehouse consciousness. So it's like consciousness, I would say, the essence kind of consciousness. It's the best I can think of. Let me see if there's another. Does anybody else have any? If anybody else has any, I just want to see if there's any more literal translation. It'll say eight consciousnesses. Well, here's the thing. This is interesting. Hebrew origin, ascender, someone who goes up, an ascender, you know? And so, and actually, I can't say this is the Sanskrit meaning of it, but it could be related. High exalted one. And then, but let me just look for it more in Sanskrit. Probably consciousness is what mostly it comes up for. So, but again, not to make that any more concretized is what they're often saying. Like, we're just acknowledging there's an essence of my mind. There is something there as far as the nature of my mind, but also empty of any inherent nature. Not getting stuck there. But realizing, as I said before, it's a resting place, that always a starting from there, always reorienting my mind as if it's home again, which home is normally a safe refuge for us. More like that. But I'm not concretizing. I'm saying this is the essence of it, but knowing that I always have that essence in me and it's always available for me. I don't know if that's helpful.
The Allah in Sanskrit means home, India, Allah.
Yeah, you could say, I mean, I think it's a slightly different word, but home, yeah.
Yeah, that's the meaning of India.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, here's another one. Between sessions, be a conjurer of illusions. Be a conjurer of illusions. I have different ways that these are often translated in different ways. So this is another way. In post-meditation, be a child of illusion. Be a child of illusion. When you finish a formal sitting meditation, okay, things sometimes come back to being kind of heavy and solid. And the mind gets a little bit more, you know, got to go to work now or, you know. But again, try to, as much as you can, remind yourself to be present and realize everything's actually pliable, open, workable. This is from Pema Chodron. This is instruction for meditation and action, realizing you don't have to feel claustrophobic. There's always a lot of room. There's always a lot of space. If I want to make things heavy and solid, that's where claustrophobia comes in. I'm keeping my mind boxed into things. It has to be like this, has to be like this, has to be like this. I go into work, and it has to be like that. And then usually what we're wanting it to be like is perfect. Where is that in samsara? Doesn't exist. So the more we try to concretize what we need, our agenda, you suffer. You suffer tremendously. Doesn't exist like that at all. So again, can I see it like a dream? Be a child of illusion. You know, it doesn't mean you don't have to practically participate. You know, your boss says the meeting's at 11, you're there at 11. You're the different people you're interacting with, whatever kind of work you're doing. It's like a dream. It's not a dream where it doesn't matter. It's like a dream, which means I can just lighten up a little bit and see, you know, I'm at a meeting and these two people are fighting and they both have strong personalities and sometimes I find them really irritating, but you know what? I'm just recognizing that, and I don't need to make it any heavier than it is. And actually, it's kind of like I see them just doing a dance in a dream. You know, and then what's your part? I have to speak up. If it's my budget, if it's something I need to, I will express, but from a good place, but seeing it a little bit lighter like that. Do people need... No, actually, we only have a half an hour. So I was thinking, are we okay to continue for half an hour without a break? Okay. Thank you. Train in the two. Giving and taking alternately. Train in the two. And here's another way of saying, sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride the breath. Okay, Tonglen meditation. Tonglen meditation. I want to do a short Tonglen meditation now. We're going to do it mainly right now just focused on ourselves. Just focused on ourselves. A lot of people do Tonglen meditation, which means taking and giving. And they do it with, they start with all living beings. And it's too much for the mind. I find it too much to start that way. So very, very helpful. I like to start with myself. Again, when it says train in the two, giving and taking alternately, this is instruction for Tonglin. In this practice, you're sending out, giving and offering all your happiness. But the first thing we are actually doing is taking the suffering. So it's hard to give beings all the happiness when they're filled up with suffering. Let's take the suffering from the front visualization of yourself that I'll describe in a moment. And you take in the suffering, not that it's going to harm you. You seated here in the room, okay? I'm taking it in with a sense of pliability, with a sense, I mean a pliable, flexible mind. I'm taking it in with an attitude of openness, compassion, okay? And I'm going to offer the happiness. People get worried. I don't want to give away my happiness and all the good fortune of my life. I'm doing it with compassion, doing it with this real sense of openness and compassion. This is what makes harmony on the planet. This is what will definitely make you happier, make you happier. Okay, so just sit comfortably. Can lightly close your eyes. This is a very profound meditation, Tonglin. And if you're not able to get a lot of other study and practice done in the Dharma over your lifetime, but you like Tonglin meditation, and as it says here, these two should ride the breath. The next line goes on to, these two are to be mounted on the breath. So you're breathing anyway. While we're alive, we are always breathing. And it's a situation we normally are taking for granted, unless you have tremendous lung difficulties or lung compromise. So why not use the breath in this most beneficial way? And imagine right now, as you're seated here in the room, at the core, in a sense, your heart center, imagine a constricted knot of all of your selfishness. So we're going to use this knot to try to decrease it as we take in the suffering. So visualize now, seated across from you, facing you, is an exact replica of yourself. And even if it's hard to visualize, get a sense as if you have a copy of yourself seated across from you. And look across at yourself. Just get a sense for a moment of what makes you suffer? What makes you happy? And every time you, seated here in the room, inhale, I'd like you to take that suffering from your front visualization as you breathe in whatever images represent suffering to you, whether it is colored light rays, images of war and poverty, words like hatred, racism, animals that can kill you, environmental toxins, anything like that. You breathe it in. It doesn't harm you. It simply harms the self-cherishing knot at your core. Purifying, purifying. It forms again and again, and we continue to purify, eradicate it. And as it gets smaller and smaller, we have a bigger space from which to give all of our happiness and joy to the front visualization of ourself. So as you exhale, you can imagine in whatever images represent that. Represent happiness, peace, bliss. Tonglin, taking and giving. Just try your best. And just looking across at yourself right now, see if you can have some experience that you've definitely lessened the problems, the suffering from the front visualization, instilling a sense of happiness and peace. And feel free to acknowledge the front visualization of yourself in any way. And then imagine them dissolving slowly from the edges of the visualization into the center, into a radiant drop of light, with all freedom and peace, and allow that to dissolve into your crown, bringing you all those positive qualities. And just feel that you've definitely diminished some of your self-cherishing just by having the thought to take another's suffering and offer them happiness, even if it's an aspect of yourself. Please relax. You can slowly open your eyes. So that's a very simple way to do, but it can help you familiarize yourself, even if it's just visualization of yourself. Tomorrow we'll have more time to do a more elaborate Tonglin practice, focusing on other beings and things like that. It's very profound meditation. So if that's all you're able to do this life, but you're dying and then you're thinking, because I'm dying anyway, if it's from a slow death, all the beings that have this illness or dying of old age or whatever it is, can I just imagine taking on that suffering, if they experience any suffering, because I'm suffering anyway, and let me offer them all the wonderful joys I've had in my life. And if you just have that in you, it's just an attitude. It's a very powerful attitude to have, because most of the world is running the other direction. Running the other direction, you know, not wanting suffering, not wanting to give away any of their goodness like that. Okay, the next one, because those two lines went together, train in the two, giving and taking alternately. These two are to be mounted on the breath. That's what we were doing. So again, use the breathing. We're breathing anyway. The next is three objects, three poisons, three sources of virtue. Three objects are friend, enemies, neutrals, friend, enemies, and strangers. Okay? Three poisons, I think we know what they are. Again, I mentioned them before. Three poisons are ignorance and attachment. Yep. Ignorance or confusion, attachment, grasping or desire, and anger or hatred. Okay? So when you feel craving, when you feel desire, own it fully and wish that all beings could be free of it. So when you're experiencing one of these things, this is how we get to the virtuous mind state of it, the three sources of virtue. You notice suddenly grasping in your mind. We have it all the time. We have it all the time. What did you want for lunch? I want to eat that. I want to eat it now. I want to sit at that table. I want to sit with that person. It's continual. I want a cup of tea. I want to go to the bathroom. It's endless. Desire, grasping, constant. What are we going to do after this? How do you go out the door? Who do you want to talk to as you're leaving? Where's your car? You want to get out the door now. It's continual. Can I just watch my mind? Okay. There it is. And then think about, because of that craving, that grasping, that desire. Yeah, this is where I am right now. My mind's merged with this. Okay. Boy, I wish all beings could be free of that. Just add that little thing. I wish all beings could be free of this. Okay? Suddenly you feel averted to somebody. You're hostile to them. And you notice it in your mind. And maybe you're driving home. You're a little bit, and then somebody doesn't signal and you get all. And then you know, but you notice. This is about noticing our mind. You can't train your mind until you're aware of how your mind operates. So I'm getting real with my mind. I notice it and immediately, can all beings be free of that experience, of that aggression? Could everybody please be free of that? I notice it in my mind. I wish the entire planet was free of that aggression. Just little, easy little ways to insert. So usually what becomes a cause of suffering, grasping, desire, attachment, aversion, hatred, you know, poisons we call them, the three poisons we just mentioned, becomes a seed of compassion and loving kindness, a seed of virtue. It's a source of virtue. Because I'm watching my mind, I'm going, wow, not a great space. May all beings be free of this, free of ever having that experience. Next one, in all activities, train by applying the slogans. Recalling any of these slogans, like I said, if you put them on your refrigerator, on the spot can dissolve your self-centeredness, your self-cherishing, can dissolve cruelty and unkindness in your mind. So use the slogans. It's easier. We have other things going through our minds normally. You know, unfortunately, we've had other imprints that aren't that healthy sometimes. And this is something, like, I know little concepts I was raised with through school, sometimes family, You know, I think one time we were kids and my brother got punched in the nose by somebody. Somebody was bullying him, basically. Now they call it bullying, right? And he came home and, you know, and then, you know, one of my parents, I don't remember who it was like, well, you know, you need to get him back. So I was younger. And so, you know, you get this idea that that's what you're supposed to do. If your parent says it, then you need to retaliate. But the parent says it because they don't know either. They don't have the wisdom yet. So that's what they were taught by their parents, who were taught by their parents. You know, you know, and then you're taught sometimes in the school. And until you find somebody, a teacher that's a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more kind of an enlightened awareness, which we found through school. Through school, sometimes you had a very special teacher, right? Somebody who really stood out. We've all had teachers like that. That's unique. But that's how we learn those things. So again, I'm training my mind in a different way. Some of it's going to feel rough. It's going to go against. Again, you're waking up the warrior within. I can do this. I can beat my self-cherishing. In fact, the planet, we kind of owe it to the planet as a Mahayana Buddhist. I'm not making a big, heavy onus on you that you owe this to the planet as your responsibility, but why not? We want it. A lot of you are volunteering right now. A lot of you do great jobs. You're volunteering. You've been doing it for years. You help a lot of beings, and some of you do it in your regular job, your paid job. So I salute you. Fantastic. It's so wonderful. So you're doing all these kind things, and now it's like it's time to take care of the mind, to make sure my mind is oriented in the same way. You want to be good people, and so it does take an effort to do more, to try to control the mind, but then you will be controlling your mind better. That's exciting. That's what you want to do. Here's the other one. Of the end of the main practice, begin the process of taking with yourself. So we just did that. Sending and taking. Start with yourself. This concept of all living beings, you know, when I first sat down, one of the first Tonglins somebody led, it was just overwhelming for me. I was like, I don't, you know, everybody's suffering. Whoa, it's just too much. So start. Tomorrow we're going to build it up slowly. Build it up slowly so that it's manageable. So start with yourself. You deserve it. You know, whatever pain you're ever experiencing, physical, emotional, whatever pain you feel, take it in, wishing for all beings to be free of that. It's another way you can do. So instead of we're just chipping away our self-cherishing, again, it's that thought, may all beings never have to experience this. Fantastic. Bigger space of mind if you're just doing the practice. You can also add that just doing it with yourself. Whatever pleasure you experience, send it out to others. Send it out to others. In this case, we were sending it to ourselves, and you can also add a thought and to all the others out there that don't experience this. In this way, our personal problems and our special delights become a stepping stone, okay, for understanding suffering and happiness of all beings. It opens us up to consider all beings suffering and happiness. And again, the whole point of this is to get me off of thinking about myself to thinking, to more open, thinking about others. As Lama Yeshe used to call it, like I said last night, totality heart. Totality heart. Heart wide open. No obstructions, no spaces, no walls. Several times I've been around, had the good fortune to be around His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The first time you're just kind of zapped because you've never really met anybody that doesn't have any obstructions in their heart space. Like it just feels like this. And heart mind in Tibetan Buddhism is the same. So in the Tibetan system, the mind exists most subtle level, and a gross level. So again, most subtle, and a gross level. The most subtle aspect of your mind resides in the center of a heart chakra, which is a subtle energy network, in the center of that energy center at the heart. So heart-mind is all connected in Tibetan Buddhism. And we also notice this when you are tremendously afraid, when you're incredibly angry, you're going to notice some gripping in your body. Do you ever notice that? People feel it in their body. Okay. Now, you might feel it in your stomach. You might feel it in your throat, in your head. These are energy centers, chakras, Chakra means wheel. But your subtle energy system, according to the Tibetan system, is made up of these energy centers. And you people, some people are more sensitive. They feel it. They feel it. Some people get a gripping in the heart. Like that. Because your mind is there. That's where the mind is. And the mind has the ability to go through these chakras and energize them. We'd like them to be energized in a productive way, in the right way, so that the channels are all open and flowing freely. Delusion obstructs that flow. You need that flow, and once you get properly initiated or empowered by a qualified teacher to do that, then you're going to use that subtle energy system to actualize higher states of realization. That's when we practice Tantra. So you need all that serviceable, we would say. And the beginning, the premise is we've got to cut down on delusion in the mind and start reducing our self-cherishing, Lojong. Any questions, comments? Yes. Sorry?
Are there, you mentioned last night, are there specific slogans or you just make them up?
These are the slogans. We're going through them right now. These are the slogans, yeah.
I thought there were like, you know, first, okay.
Yeah. They, you know, train in the preliminaries, or we'll get to some. These are the slogans. There's like 52 slogans. And we'll get to some ones that sound more like slogans. Okay, so I'm just giving you the slogan, and then I'm giving a little explanation of the slogan. But, you know, here's some other ones we're going to get to tomorrow. Don't ponder others' flaws. Give up poisonous food. Don't be so loyal to the cause, and then you'll understand more. But they're all related to countering self-cherishing, getting you to open up more. But these, we're right in the middle starting the slogan. So again, they're split up into 7 points, which I mentioned they divided them into Geshe Chikawa to preliminaries, a main practice, transforming adversity into the path. That's about transforming problems. Then how do I apply the practice, ones that relate to that in my whole life? And then, how's it going? How's your mind training going? The measure of mind training. And then there's commitments of mind training and precepts of mind training that are, you know, somewhat related. So that's what we're going through, some of those. Any other questions? Let's do a few more. This is transforming problems into the path of enlightenment. Transforming adversity into the path of enlightenment. Okay? When all the world is filled with evil, transform adversity into the path of enlightenment. Okay. Whatever, this is our main thing we're trying to work on. Whatever problems occur in your life, okay, instead of reacting to them in your usual habitual way that may court negativity, okay, why don't you transform them into a cause of enlightenment? Okay. So meaning you're going to awaken compassion. Kind of try to keep the heart open as much as possible, which I find, and you go, but the person was right in front of me and I can't stand them and I couldn't do anything about it at the time. Perfect example. This happens to all of us, okay? That's why I have my little safe space at home or wherever I am, that I have my meditation practice. So later, and this would happen to me when I worked for this magazine in California, and I'd come back and I'd be really frustrated some days, and I'd come back. And then sometimes I was just, the first 5 minutes was like, what happened today? My God. You know, and I'd be kind of like, I don't want to repeat a day like that. So what was going on? And I just kind of shed, let it go. All the different thoughts flying around. Very agitated mind state. There's a problem. You know, what do I want to do with it? I couldn't deal with it during the day, but now I'm going to come back and I notice just, minute by minute, relaxation coming. I'm okay now. Okay, I'm going to get some perspective on that. Well, that guy, you know, he's got a big ego and he's always like that. And then so does he. And when they never agree. And I'm just observing. I'm not blaming necessarily and saying, but it's just kind of observing like, yeah, they're just people. They're really not that scary. You know, when I'm in front of them in the face when they're yelling, then it's, you know, but now I've taken it back and I'm like, everything's actually okay. You know, slowly, you give yourself this time, settle. So, in the space, I could use Tonglin, I could use Tonglen first with myself out there, just to calm things down, that sending myself some goodness, maybe I need that. Maybe I need to focus a little bit more on taking my suffering. That's fine. Maybe I want to include some other people and maybe put the difficult people in front of me and do Tonglen with them. That's more challenging, but you can try. Realizing they're just human beings like you and me, they want to be happy. They don't want to suffer, but they do suffer just like me. Happiness keeps escaping them. You know, we suddenly start equalizing ourselves, realizing we're the same. We're the same. So again, when problems arise and you're in the problem at the moment, there it is, the same thing, and you know that your habitual tendency is to react negatively, and you just have a rut of that, just be with it, just awake with it, of like, okay, I'm going to say that stupid thing I always say. Or what I want to do is say that thing I always say. And you might not even have to label it the stupid thing I always say, but sometimes those words are in there. I'm just being real about it. What happens is maybe you catch yourself with, oh, that's how I always react when he pushes my button. Again, use the breathing. Use the breathing a little to calm you down, the face. You can't deal with it then. Sometimes I find it better. I learn to finally stay silent. I got to a point when I would always react. Always my mouth opens up and I'm going to set it right. I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. Okay? It was like this. But then I learned after a while, I got tired of that because it just got more and more agitated. The person would fight and they'd say, no, you're stupid. And so I got tired of that. So when you get tired of a negative pattern, it's a very powerful place for you. That's where the beginning of your renunciation is. What do you think when I say the word renunciation? What do you think about that? What does that word mean to you?
Change.
Get out. What are you getting out of? Getting out of the suffering, getting out of the pattern. And back here, who said? Christianity, you think of with renunciation? Giving up what binds you, okay? So this is great about getting away from the suffering, getting out of the suffering, is the renunciation, it's giving something up on one level. If you look up a definition, and so people often don't like the word, they go, renunciation, I have to give something up that I like. No, what if you're giving up your suffering? That's the beginning of renunciation in Buddhism. So when you get to a point, you have a pattern, and you finally are like, enough, I can't do this anymore. That's a really powerful place for you because you're starting to have compassion for yourself. I'm suffering enough with this. I'm done. But done in a positive way, meaning I've got to figure out a different way to deal with my mind in this. So what I learned in that is I would say my little snippy thing, and then I get into trouble, and something went off, a bell at one point, and I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing it anymore with this person. Like, this is crazy. Why we keep going through this thing? So then I learned the thing. When the button got pushed, I was at least able to just keep my mouth shut. My mind was still like, ah! But I could manage that I'm not going to escalate it with this. And that was a big step for me. And then the situation would calm a little bit more quickly. And then I actually learned more coping mechanisms so that I wasn't angry anymore. You know, of considering this person and me, just as I want to be happy and don't want to suffer, so do they. Just as I have Buddha nature, a potential of all of my goodness to manifest at some point, so do they. So suddenly I'm like, we have something in common. You know, and this person suffers. I'm labeling this person an idiot, let's say. I mean, I don't really call people idiots, but, you know, my mind would get activated that way. They're so stupid. You know, don't they know? You know, why are they? And I'd be labeling that, right? I suffer from delusion, too. And because I suffer from delusion, here's a thought. Because I suffer from delusion, that means my mind's out of balance and I'm not seeing clearly, right? If I'm not seeing clearly, how am I so sure that they're deluded and they're idiotic? I'm not seeing clearly. They could be a Buddha, for all I know. They're part of the conspiracy. They want to get me enlightened. And back to the eight verses. Precious jewel that is showing me my mind. Thank you so much. Because I can't get enlightened without you. Yeah. Is it painful and uncomfortable? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'm just there with it then. And you know what? That's okay. And that's sometimes good enough. It's good enough. It's not always going to be peaceful and comfortable on planet Earth in samsara. It's just not. Give that one up. So if you want to find renunciation with that, the first thing is face-to-face with samsara. It sucks. It just does. That's its nature. So you're trying to find happiness there in samsara? There's happiness in getting your mind balanced, and there's happiness in opening your heart, yes, but not in samsara. And some of you probably, like me, I did this for years. I was trying to fix samsara. You can fix it, can't you? You know, I was like, but I know if we just, and even in organizations, Buddhist organizations, in the centers I was running, and we were, you know, and then first I came into a center that had all these senior students. They had their community, and they were going to tell me how it was going to run. You know, I was brought in as the director from Rinpoche. They agreed. They were happy. But they're going to tell me now what's going to go down. Okay. So I had all this thing. It was just too much like that. So when you get more control of the mind, I found the communication much better. Everything was working much better. But initially it's hard and you're dealing with all these people and stuff's coming in. And so even Buddhist things, when I wanted to improve something that seemed so logical to me, but then I had to remember, and then we'd try something and it would seem like it'd be so practical and we're just going to do this, and then it wouldn't work. Or something would backfire or something would happen, you know, and then they'd blame me or I'd get upset and you realize, but because it's in samsara. And if the cause is not there, the result will not come to fruition. So you can do all your fundraising campaigns. Let's say for a center, you do all your fundraising campaigns and you get the perfect letter. And you have several people proof it, and you put it on this paper, and you get the photo, and it's just what you wanted. And it, the money won't come in unless the cause is there. So the internal work has to be done along with the external work. It's not that you don't do the fundraising campaign, but if you don't have the internal work, and this was something we did at centers where I didn't have much money, you know, from these centers, whatever, but I would try to make small offerings myself as the director. My own personal donations to certain charities that I liked. Little donations. Then as a center, we tried to make donations. We didn't have any money at both the centers I was running. We were totally strapped with money. But we, you know, this one opportunity, I'm like, oh, can we, we're just going to send $10. Can certainly send $10, $20 to something. So we would, through the year, you know, started coming back. We never looked back. It was just constantly, you know, and it really for me, it was, I didn't know in the beginning, like how convinced I was about cause and result. When we did it, I had deepened my faith. It's got to work that way. So again, you try, but you can't fix samsara. Okay. So again, if I dismantle the cause of some negative ripening in my mind, then it will go away. You may not have to experience the kind of suffering. And if I enhance some cause that's very positive and virtuous, I'm going to reap the benefits of that. That's how it works. So I'm going to leave you there. We're out of time. I hope this is helpful. We've got more slogans to go through, some more fun ones, I think, that are a little bit more fun tomorrow. And then the morning is 10 to noon. 10:30. Oh, sleeping. Okay. 10:30 to noon, and so I think we're going to take some questions and see what, in general, the audience, I think we're going to kind of have an open thing if there's things. I like to tailor things, so because Sunday Geshe-la does, it's more in a lighter thing, I thought if people have anything burning, I thought we might talk about that, and then we're going to get back to this at 1:30 till 4. And I'm going to try to bring... I want to bring my computer to bring this, some of this other text about transforming problems specifically. Thank you. So let's dedicate the merit. Whatever positive energy we have created and Let's see. Can we read this prayer? Pages 32 and 33 from Master Shantideva. It starts halfway down the page. And let's send this out to the universe. Do you need a book? Do you have a copy of a book somebody can borrow? Or? Oh, great. Thank you. Pages 32-33. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. Find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, those bound be freed, the powerless find power. May people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. If we could turn to page 244 of the Long Life Prayers. And I'd like to dedicate also to all the beings on the planet who need additional healing. May they receive it immediately and completely for the great flourishing of Kadampa Center. And for the long lives of all the precious teachers here, especially Geshe Gelug. And may we be able to really turn our minds from the normally reactive negative patterns we have that are grounded in delusion and really begin to transform them to something glorious and peaceful that will benefit the entire planet. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunas victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Thank you very much. So if you need a card, I've got some up here, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow. So please remember your exercises, if you can, when you go to sleep, when you wake up in the morning, a little bit of balancing the mind, considering your precious human rebirth, that death is coming. So we really want to motivate our practice, and then from there set a motivation. Good motivation, then get up and get out of bed. And even now, from this evening, we can look at, you want to see everything like an illusion. If there's something that suddenly you notice you're getting tweaked, some breathing, and like, okay, this isn't as solid as I'm making it right now. It's simply a karmic ripening of some negative deed I've done in the past, and now that it's coming to fruition, I'm purifying. You can do. Thank you.